Getting a standing ovation after making a speech is so much better than getting a walking ovation. If you're nervous about audiences greeting your orations with a sudden burst of indifference, then this lesson helps you so that they welcome your words and performance overall with a sustained burst of enthusiasm. The American philosopher and essayist Ralph Waldo Emerson once intoned, "It is the vice of our public speaking that it is not abandonment." Somewhere, not only every orator, but every man should let out all the length of all the reins, should find or make a frank and hearty expression of what force and meaning is in him. Seneca, the Roman statesman and Stoic philosopher, had a more colourful take. A speech should evolve like the act of love. It should begin slowly. It should progress at a steady pace. It should end with a bang. And it should last no more than 2 minutes. Obviously, people enjoyed his speaking much more than his lovemaking. But even great speakers like the former British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, one of history's most compelling orators, worked hard to make it appear easy. The wartime leader's talent for extemporaneous debate was apparent to fans and critics alike. Winston, quipped his fellow Tory MP and former Lord Chancellor F.E. Smith, the first Earl of Birkenhead, Winston has devoted the best years of his life to preparing his impromptu speeches. Still, you shouldn't go to the lengths that the Greek orator Demosthenes went to. He was considered to be one of the greatest orators of the classical period, but having suffered so badly from stuttering that he could scarcely speak in public, he forced himself to practice speaking with a handful of pebbles in his mouth. In fact, it's also said that he shaved one side of his head so that he would not be tempted to go out and socialise instead of practising. But often, simplicity as well as a short speech is what has your audience spellbound. One famous example dates back to the November the 19th, 1863, when the US President Abraham Lincoln attended the dedication of the National Cemetery at Gettysburg. So did Edward Everett, the former American minister to the Court of St. James. Both men were exceptional speakers. Everett spoke first, delivering one of his finest orations. After speaking for about 2 hours, Everett sat down and Lincoln rose and spoke for just 2 minutes. While Everett's speech is largely forgotten, Lincoln's is read by every American schoolchild. It is known, of course, as the Gettysburg Address. Hubert Humphrey, the former U.S. Vice President under Lyndon B. Johnson, was once given a word of advice by his wife Muriel. "Hubert, a speech doesn't have to be eternal to be immortal." It doesn't matter whether you're making a business presentation, speaking to a high-spirited audience at a sporting club dinner, or at your wedding. The principles are the same. You're on stage and performing. The focus is on you, so you have to give it your best shot. Therefore, you cannot afford to let your nerves and any lack of confidence show through, because audiences sense it and they react to it. If you come across as confident, charming, witty, warm and authentic, they'll love you 10 times more than you thought they could. This boosts your confidence and performance as a speaker, meaning you'll get better and better, and therefore more and more audiences will want to hear you speak. Whether you're a businessman or woman or representing an organization or yourself, they'll think of you and whoever you represent in an even better light. So what have you got to say? Well, once you've worked out what you want to say, after you've defined your audience's outcomes, of course, and your outcomes, then this helps you lay the important foundation stones to a great speech and presentation. It is crucial, as without a firm base, your presentation runs the risk of being unsound and shaky in front of the very people you're actually capable of impressing. You should regard winging it as wasting it. The first time I had an important keynote speech to deliver, without notes, in front of 150 professional speakers, I rehearsed the 45-minute long oration 13 times at full throttle as if I was on stage in front of my peers. This was so I could get the platform dynamics, the voice intonations, the body language elements, the stories and other aspects delivered in the most powerful way. It worked, and it led to more speaking gigs as a result. Practice your introduction and ending until you know them without having to look at your notes. The start and end of your presentation are what sets the tone for your communication in anticipation and in retrospect. A strong introduction leaves your audience keen to hear more from you. A rallying ending leaves them feeling compelled to act as you have motivated them to, and this makes them think even more of you. Conversely, if you go in unprepared, your audience senses this as you and your presentation meander and float about without poise, without purpose, or without pizzazz. They're likely to lose sight of what you're trying to convey and then rapidly lose interest in both your unclear message and you. If doing a presentation for the first time, you need to rehearse it fully, at least 3 to 5 times, ideally, without notes, to get the feel for it. Because presenting is like dating. even if you're very perceptive, you're not really going to be able to know someone completely on an initial date. You need to spend more time with them to get to know the true extent of the person they are, their ups and downs, and their good and bad and bizarre bits, as you need to find out what lurks beneath the often carefully polished veneer. A presentation is the same. You only really get a feel for it and what it is capable of becoming once you practice it at least several times. This is how you get to know its character. Remember, your audience is forming impressions all the time. Firstly, about you as a person, then secondly, about you as a professional, and thirdly, about your content. So make sure you're perfectly in sync. One of the great curses of the corporate communication culture is a brand diminishing lack of color. Far too many business presentations and even presenters are colorless, bland, banal, and sometimes baffling instead of being beguilingly brilliant. It's so unnecessary too. Even if you have a conservative business or work in conservative markets, you can still be colorful without having to portray your brand. And yet so many businesses are afraid of being colorful in the way they communicate on so many levels. That's why a lot of external and internal presentations, pitches, and interactions are dismal and undynamic and fall flat. They not only fail to achieve their aim, but actually sometimes undermine that aim, damage their brand, and even the person or the people presenting. Every 2 days now, we create as much information as we did from the dawn of civilization up until 2003, according to Eric Schmidt when he was chairman of Google. Therefore, whatever you communicate has to be engaging, otherwise it melts into the mix of the conservative, the common, and the colourless. Tabloid journalism is a great example of how to add colour, even if a story has been sexed up a little. In fact, as a former reporter and undercover investigative journalist for UK national newspapers, including some of the tabloids, I know that tabloids are invariably the hardest to work and write for. There's a lot of wordplay, alliteration, and concise opening paragraphs, sometimes as few as 7 words. You have to learn how to communicate with concise and compelling colour. No matter how technical or seemingly a dry a subject is, or even a person, you can make it and them interesting. It's looking at all the facts, particularly the unusual ones, and then using analogy, metaphor, and the colour, context, and contrast principle to present the facts and figures in a way that makes your audience think and feel differently. Colour and contrast are used by the media all the time. For instance, look for 2 or even 4 contrasting products and or services in your range and the countries you export to. So, rather than saying, we produce large and small widgets for countless countries around the world. Oh, yes. Now, sorry, but some people actually do speak like that. And they're that interesting in terms of the content of the words they use. You can make it more interesting by stating, we produce widgets that you can fit in the palm of your hand to ones that are the size of a family fridge freezer and export them to countries ranging from Argentina and Australia to India and Iceland. The latter is much more engaging. Complicated and confusing. The clarity of your message is crucial to help convey it so your audience understands it and can engage with it more easily. Alas, too often business messages in presentations and other forms of communication are complicated and confusing. Tools like PowerPoint, which can be a very effective tool if used properly, that is, invariably isn't. People use it in presentations to write their speaking notes and everything pretty well, it seems, bar their yearly shopping list and medical history. It gives them security. The irony is that this apparent security is very insecure, as it actually tends to not only secure the very things you're afraid of, indifference, inaction, and even irritation amongst your audience. Presenters pack their PowerPoint presentation to the gunnels with a constant barrage of bullet points, fancy but fiddly graphs and charts, and if you're lucky, a few funky animations that add movement to their presentation, but not necessarily understanding. So keen are they to make sure that nothing is left out, they pan their audience with all their key messages. While the audience wends its way through the labyrinthine lecture, they begin to struggle to remember key point number 14, or was it number 27A? Whether making a speech, talking to the media, or communicating with an audience who you want to be remembered by favourably, you should give them no more than 3 key messages. Just one is even better. It's often said, actually, that the reason the keynote speech is called a keynote is because there is just 1 key note. And of course, remember the rule of 3. This general rule shows that concepts and ideas presented in threes are inherently more interesting, more enjoyable, and more memorable. This is applied very effectively in making speeches, comedy, writing, and music. A series of 3 is often used to create a progression in which the tension is created, then built up, and then finally released. Similarly, adjectives are often grouped together in 3s in order to emphasize an idea. Clarity. Businesses and too many business people love using jargon and dry corporate language. For instance, We are planning to integrate a multi-channel approach of the primary target demographic aimed at acquiring information and based on a feedback cycle loop. We've got to have one of those. Yes. That should give us the trajectory we want to propel us into the top quartile of customer continuity interventions. Oh, yes. Now, I love doing that voice and many others, but so you will know this. So many presentations are like that. And statements are like that, communication. Like, it's dull, it's desperate, it's dreary, it's dissolute, and it will defeat anything you're trying to achieve. Now, you could, of course, quite simply say, an alternative, much better version is, we're talking with our customers to get their feedback so we can provide an even better service to them. Simple, succinct, and much more powerful. And yet, how often have you had to wade your way through the former and wonder what on earth it means? The latter tells you it as it is. Those you talk with and write for appreciate it so much more if you communicate in a language they can relate to and enjoy and have simple key points for them to digest and act upon. Platform dynamics. Your performance and the audience's perception of it is transformed when you roam selectively around the speaker stage and even amongst your audience. Never stand behind a lectern unless you really, really have no choice or unless you're sort of stapled there or glued to the spot behind said lectern. If you do, then you create an immediate barrier between you and the people you're trying to communicate with, whereas having the freedom to move about the platform suggests you have the confidence to do that. It makes you appear more open and enables you to add some physical dynamism to your presentation. So, what do you do now? You have the platform to yourself. Apply these four key points. Stand mainly in the middle and the front of your platform as this demonstrates visually and subconsciously that you want to engage your audience. Depending on how deep the stage is, the further back you stand, the more visually and therefore the more subconsciously disconnected you become from your audience. An exception to this is if you're demonstrating something in a story you tell or as part of an exercise you demonstrate. 3. It's good to move about from left to right at the front of the platform to engage both the right and left sides of an auditorium. But don't march up and down metronomically as if you're changing the guard at Buckingham Palace because you're hell-bent on adding physical variety to your platform performance. One so-called professional speaker did this just after I'd been speaking at an event for professional speakers. He repeatedly marched back and forth along the front of the platform and rarely looked at us in the audience, choosing to focus instead on the two front corners of said platform. We all felt thoroughly baffled and then disengaged. He was never asked back again. 4. Now, when you come to make a very important point and you want to distill the energy in the room to make everyone then zero in on what you're saying, slowly come to a halt and then deliver your key point. As much as moving around is great, if done too much or at the wrong moment, it can prove distracting and even disorientating. But when you want to focus everyone's attention on you and something key, stopping on the spot intensifies the moment and therefore what you're saying. Engaging extremities. Now, your body's a powerful communication tool, or more to the point, a set of them. So I'm now going to provide you with a boiled down version to give you some effective ways of using your extremities when you're presenting. 1. Open palms with open arms. This can indicate that you're honest, open, and without artifice. 2. Pushing downward, facing palms downwards. This projects authority and matter-of-factness, as if to say, I lay down the law on this point, and that's it. Gospel. 3. Hammer and nail forefinger. This is where the fingers are closed into your palm, apart from your forefinger, which you use to repeatedly point downwards as if you're hammering in an invisible nail with it, or from your audience's point of view, reinforcing a key point. The OK gesture, when you press your forefinger against the thumb in an OK style configuration, it can make you seem authoritative but not arrogant and adds emphasis to what you're saying. Pick and mix. This is where your hand and arm on one side is adopting a different gesture to the hand and arm on the other side of your body. This subconsciously stimulates your audience to pay closer attention as you appear to be doing two disconnected things with your different arms and hands. You use this, for instance, when telling a story about you trying to make sense of something baffling or to illustrate something erratic, conflicting, or random. And a way in towards motivation. You've already discovered examples in this course for how to use a way in towards motivation when writing and speaking. To use it visually is very simple. When talking to an audience, their away motivation zone is to their left, your right, and their towards motivation zone is to their right, your left. So when talking about something that is away motivated, the fear of, say, losing business, your partner or your wealth, then you use your arms and hands to point to your right. even standing in that area of your platform. Whereas when talking about towards motivating things, like generating more business, having a great love life and making more money, you use your hands and arms to point to your left, even standing in that particular area of your platform to reinforce the message for your audience. Okay, please pause this program for now and do the relevant accompanying exercise that comes with a worksheet for this lesson. This is important because this exercise is going to help you embed what you're learning here psychologically so you become much more effective practically. In other words, how you now apply these skills to become more successful in the real world. And when you've completed this exercise, then please continue enjoying the lesson. Thank you. What have you learned in this lesson? That you don't need to make your speech so involved and complicated by overloading it with stuff to win over your audience. Simplicity and succinctness can often win the day for you. You've learned that winging it is actually wasting it and all the opportunities your presentation can present you with your audience. Making presentations is like dating. You have to do the right things in the right way, in the right sequence, at the right time to woo your audience. You've discovered how to properly use visual aids so that they enhance and not envelop your presentations. You've learned four key elements of platform dynamics so when you're speaking on a stage, other than not standing behind or even holding onto any lectern as if your life depending on it. And you've discovered six powerful ways to use your hands to get your message across more persuasively. Now, what's coming up in the next lesson? You discover the secrets of successful pitching and presenting in a team. So, onwards.